This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. We got my favorite doctor on today, and one of my best buddies in the whole wide world, John Daniel Rudd. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things. And this is going to be an unusual day because there's so many people out there that have so much respect and owe Dr. Rudd so many things that we're going to open up the line this morning for anybody to call in. And especially during this time when there's so many people that are sick and not feeling good. But is that because we're in Tennessee, or what is the progression of all these diseases that come in here from time to time, and all the allergies and all the things that go on here?
Good morning, Truman. Let me say that first. It's good to be here. I don't think Tennessee's unique in that. We have seasonal flares of illness, upper respiratory conditions, whether they're just viral, nonspecific things, or actually influenza. And right now, Tennessee is actually beginning to see a spike in the number of influenza cases. And that's a lot more serious infection than a sinus infection, typically. And that's why I really encourage people to take their flu shot. I know that you don't like yours, but, you know, not everybody does take it, and some people are allergic to them and they shouldn't take it, but for the vast majority of people, they really should take the flu shot. I take one.
People should never pay any attention to me when they're getting sick or whatever, because I'm really not very practical when it comes to
things. You do some things that, you know, I don't like the way you do it, but you know, you don't watch your blood pressure or your cholesterol as much as you should, and you don't like your flu shot. But that's okay. That's just the way you are.
Well, you know, I'm still alive, and we've been working on that for, 20 years?
At least. So, I mean, I have to take it with a grain of salt. I understand.
You know, being a doctor is to me, is the highest calling. And you fit right there at the top, because you go back to the old days when doctors became physicians to heal people, and that was their main goal or main function. And you really haven't strayed away from that course. You and I have had many conversations on how much time that you spend dealing with people's problems, and you go above and beyond what most other physicians do. And you seem to be driven by your particular occupation to make it better and make the you actually become friends of all your patients, which is an unusual thing.
I love my patients. I really do. I think a lot. There are a lot of good physicians out there, though. I enjoy what I do. I care about the people I get to take care of and work with, and wish I could do more. But it's one of those things that things change, and I'm not in an open practice like I used to be, but I still have a collection of my patients that I work with and I enjoy, and it's always been very satisfying to me to get to do that. I feel like that to actually be involved with a person at the level that a physician is an honor as a physician to be there, and I appreciate that and take that seriously.
And you never had let any grass grow underneath your feet. I mean, you're constantly studying. And as things changes, diseases changes, the remedies and all that, you're constantly reading. And you've gone to Boston almost every year to catch up on all the changes in the medical field and everything like that. So it's almost like you have no time for anything else.
Well, I make time for doing things I need to.
Of course, for medicine.
I love to read. I love to attend classes. I do try to stay up on things the best I can. Internal medicine is a very broad area. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of reading just to stay as close to current as you can. And it's still impossible to stay actually current in everything, but it's a combination of reading, attending classes, seeing patients, talking to other specialists that helped to educate me even more, and I enjoy it. It's fun for me.
And being in probably the most honorable field, a career that most people would choose, the medical profession has been attacked quite a bit in the last 15, 20, 25 years. And it's been an economical effect and some other things. And what would you attribute to the high cost in insurance and all the other things, the pharmaceutical supplies and things like that, that are driving the cost of medicine straight through the roof? Because that's not the way that I know that you look at things. But I know that it's more expensive to be in medical practice right now than it's ever been.
It is. It's a combination of things. You know, there's healthcare costs that are outside the doctor's office, mm-hmm. the costs of being in the hospital. Those costs are going up steadily. The costs of having studies done, imaging studies or surgical procedures, invasive studies like endoscopy, those are all increasing in cost. Chemotherapy, you know, as we deal with an aging population, we're seeing more cancer. Mm-hmm. And cancer has very expensive treatments. The treatments that are becoming more and more effective are newer, expensive things to receive, and frequently are many thousands of dollars a month to mm-hmm. receive the chemotherapy. And there are a lot of variables that go into it. You know, employee costs. It costs a lot of money just to have employees to help you, whether it's in an office, a hospital, an imaging facility. Employee costs are a huge part. Mm-hmm. There are many aspects to the cost of healthcare mm-hmm. that a doctor has no control of. I mean, and to some extent, there's no single person that has any control of it. You, mm-hmm. all you can do is do the best you can to negotiate that and provide care. I think one of the things that has been a problem is there's a disparity in the level of care that's available to people. Mm-hmm. And it's not just people who are not working. I mean, there are a lot of working people who do not have insurance, who cannot afford the healthcare system as it is now. They don't qualify for TennCare. They're not old enough for Medicare, and they don't have a way to get into the system and have any help. It's too expensive. That's a real problem. And I think that, you know, that's something that I've always tried to help with, work with people. We have now, at this point, we have the availability of a lot of generic medications that are very effective, that offer opportunities for most people to be on a generic drug. Mm-hmm. There are a few that there are not alternatives that are generic that we have to use brand name. And when we do. But it's still many times we can use generics. And that helps quite a bit because there are many generics that now are $4 a month mm-hmm. for using them, and antibiotics that you can prescribe a whole course for, you know, $5 or $6, and that's available. And so there are many things that you can do to try to help people, but the system is still expensive, and there is no way yet to make that easy to deal with for people.
You know, being in a society like we are now, it seems like a lot of times when government gets involved in private business, and we'll call medicine private business in a lot of ways, is that a positive thing? Because we have seen when TennCare became in Tennessee, and I think Governor Bredesen was pushing it in a favorable way, and then after a while, he was no longer that satisfied with TennCare because there were so many things that went wrong within the system. And now we have Obamacare coming on. Is that a possibility with government getting involved would that be more of a positive or a negative thing? Because most times that you and I have seen over the years, there's so much abuse in it and so many other negative things that take part that it becomes more of a problem than an effective way of dealing with it. And how do the physicians look at that? Because I know it affects them directly.
Well, I think that the younger physicians are basically coming into medicine at a time where they know that it's going to be that way.
Right.
The older physicians lived through a time that it wasn't, and so they may have a harder time. But it's inevitable that in a part of our economy and our life that is so huge, as healthcare is, mm-hmm. the government's going to be involved in it. There are going to be mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, every time a government program is set up, it seems to offer the opportunity for people to commit fraud and abuse. It always does. And I think that what has to be done is to try to identify areas that basically people abuse and correct those. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a process. It's not going to be perfect, but it is here, and it looks like it's going to be here for a long time. And we better get used to it, learn how to use it, and all adapt to it, because it looks like it's done.
Well, I mean, from all indications, and of course, I guess it depends on which states opt to it and what type of program that they can set up themselves.
I think that there's still going to be a lot of negotiating with all of that, mm-hmm. but it seems like that we're moving into a different time, and how that's going to be negotiated between states and the federal government, even between different companies that have been given waivers. I mean, you know, there are a lot of companies that have been given special exemptions for things, and how that's going to all play out will probably be 3 or 4 years, 5 years, maybe longer than that even, in really being decided. But we're changing, and we're changing fast. It's going to be different in the next 4, 5, 6 years than it is or has been in the last 10 or 12 years. And how it will change and exactly what states will do to slow it down or speed it up. There'll be some states that, you know, obviously don't play easily with the federal government, and it'll be a slower process. But I suspect that in the end, everybody's going to change.
I think the one thing that a lot of people fear as much as anything is losing their relationship with their physicians that they've had for many years, and the ones that they have a rapport with, and the physicians that know them so well.
That's going to happen. I mean, you know, it's going to be different. There are going to be clinics that'll be larger clinics. There'll mm-hmm. be a lot of patients there. There'll be a lot of other providers there, nurse practitioners, PAs that will assist in delivering care. The time with the individual patient will be less. Mm-hmm. The accessibility to the doctor will be less. You know, there'll be exceptions. There'll be still doctors out there, but in general, it's going to be a different healthcare system.
Well, it's almost like it's going to be like an assembly line, which is, I'm sure it's not going to be exactly like that, but it kind of bodes that way.
Well, it's going to change, and I think for the people who are used to this system, you know, they'll adapt to the new system. It's kind of like going to the VA hospital versus a doctor's office, even today. You know, the VA attempts to provide good care to veterans, but they have a volume problem, mm-hmm. and they don't have the same kind of relationship that most patients assist with their doctor in developing a healthcare plan, and there's just not the same relationship in a large system like a VA system as there is in a private practice. But I think more and more people are going to get used to those larger systems, and they'll adapt, because really there's not much choice.
You know, the way we're sitting here talking about it, it sounds almost like just a touch of socialism, doesn't it? Because there's so much money going into the government field, and the government then in turn actually runs the process.
Well, I think that it's going to be more than a touch of socialism.
It's going to be a lot.
It's going to be socialism.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. And it's what's happening to the system. It's what's happening to the country. You know, we live in a time where, you know, if you count federal employees, state employees, local government employees, and the people who work serving those employees, you're way over 50% of people working.
Right.
And, you know, and that, you wonder, how can that be self-sustaining? Because government really doesn't produce anything. It's a service. It's not a producer. And you have to have the producers out there who keep enough money in the system for the service people to work. Mm-hmm. And it's a question beyond my pay grade. I don't know how it'll work.
But basically what we're doing is establishing another bureaucratic system, another entity that's going to be a large government-run process.
Exactly true. And it's going to determine things like whether or not a particular person needs or is going to have access to certain medicines, treatments, surgeries, anything in the healthcare field. There's going to be a system that determines that.
Now, the one thing that's bothered me over the years, and you've seen it a whole lot more than that, is that practicing medicine in any form, especially I would guess more in that would be surgery related, there are a lot of pitfalls, and we're talking about the legal field, and the insurance has just risen so high that I have a number of friends besides you that have been in the medical field for a long time. And some of them, it's actually pushed them out because the cost of having the insurance to cover all of that is so expensive. And I've racked my brain to say, how in the world can we get ourselves into a situation like this? And we're commonly, every day, we're bombarded by advertisements from attorneys that if you've taken this type of medicine or you've had this type of surgery or whatever, you need to call such and such and such and such, and we can get you large sums of money because this has happened. Do you feel like that this is a logical way of dealing with the problems? Because I have seen those things get so far out of hand. And a lot of the time, they're frivolous lawsuits. Doctors are human. I mean, every doctor has its own, he has his own special talents. You know, everybody's not equal. I mean, I've been blessed to have you and Tommy Johns and some of the other local physicians here that, to me, are right at the top of the mark. But do you feel like that doctors are held in a position that's not really real when it comes to responsibilities like that? Because a lot of them are the grace of God.
Oh, that's true. I mean, it's difficult to answer that because in a system like we have, medicine itself has not done a great job at taking care of its own. Mm-hmm. You know, the medical societies, not particularly Tennessee only, but every state has its own licensing and monitoring of physicians. And many times that system has failed to identify and correct physicians who are substandard, mm-hmm. who are not doing as they should. And because of that, the legal system has had an opportunity to step in there and do that. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it's a check and balance. I think that it's hard to imagine a physician who can do something good or bad that's worth $5 million. Mm-hmm. You know, but the biggest thing is to identify physicians who are inappropriate, either chemically impaired or their practice is substandard, anything that would be a detriment to the public. Those people need to be identified, either re-educated or removed, whatever it's appropriate. And, you know, and if that was done in a better way, that's going to take care of a lot of the lawsuits.
Have we lessened the standards to somewhat for physicians because there's such a great need for them?
I think that that gets into kind of a dicey political discussion, but it's definitely changed. Medical schools are different today. The availability of other providers, nurse practitioners, PAs, has changed a lot of things. We are in a time where the role of the physician is really being recreated, and it's going to be different. And so we're not going to have the same type ideas of doctors or anybody that we had in the past, because they won't be out there by themselves. They're going to be physicians with other practitioners that work with them. They'll be in and out. So often now I see doctors, they'll move to, for instance, to Murfreesboro, be here 2 or 3 years, and then move away. Mm-hmm. And it used to be that when a doctor came to town, I mean, he was done. This is where they stayed for their whole life. They were here until they died or retired. Mm-hmm. And that's changing. It's not the same level of being established and committed to a community anymore.
That's one thing that really bothers me, and I mentioned that earlier. Your family physician is your best friend. He really is. He knows you better than anybody else does. And then once you lose that relationship, that contact, it's not going to be the same for you anymore. They'll never be able to treat you the way your family physician did. And like you said, we always had physicians, doctors with us our whole lives, except when they passed on and then someone would come in and take their place. And usually it was someone you knew to start with anyway. So the familiarity with a physician or your family doctor means a great deal. And I really hate to see anything like that lost. But you see the things that happen, just like you can buy pharmaceutical supplies, drugs, from other countries a whole lot cheaper than you can buy from the United States. And I've always found that to be very interesting. It seems like sometimes we're paying the cost for the whole world sometimes.
We are. And it makes no sense. It's like the rule that you can't buy your health insurance across state lines. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense either.
No.
You know, and not being able to buy the same drug anywhere you can get it for the cheapest price doesn't make sense. And those are the kind of rules that basically have controlled healthcare costs a great deal. And
are we legislating ourselves out of the business?
Well, I think legislation, you know, it's amazing to me that that we have to have legislative sessions, whether the state or in Washington, D.C., and they come up with so many new laws every year that I think we could do without most of them. But we still get new ones every year. And I guess it'll continue that way forever. But I like the way Texas does it, where their state legislature only meets every other year. You know?
And yeah, that does help, doesn't it?
It makes a lot of sense, because just think of all the laws they don't have, because they don't need them. And, I mean, you know, and that is a very, I think, a pattern that nobody's going to agree to, because think of all the power that's lost by not meeting that year. I mean, that's an important aspect of government, its power.
And, you know, change, constant change, cannot be good. And we've seen it over the years. And it seems like the more they pass legislation, whether it be state or federal, the more government control takes over. And, you know, I think we've done pretty darn good for well over 200 years. And then all of a sudden we, you know, there have been errors that needed to be corrected. But when you start jumping at every little thing that happens, and you need to have legislation for this and legislation for that, it's almost like they're pushing us into a third world state. And that's scary for me. It really is.
Well, change is inevitable, and it's constant change.
Oh, I wish it wasn't.
Well, I do too sometimes, but it is, and it's part of our life. It's part of our culture. It's, you know, our country. Our country is very different than it was 50 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's going to be very different again in the next few years. And it's a changing entity. We can't expect things to stay the same. And I think that it's understanding that we want to have input into it the best we can at the level we are. And then, to me, the ultimate real benefit for me is to try to figure out ways to help people. Mm-hmm. Because no matter what changes, it seems like I can still find ways that I can help. And that's the part that keeps me going. And
you go back to the old ways, though. I mean, in some ways, it was so effective that way, because if people had insurance, then you would collect your office there would collect the amount of money's owed, and they would work with the insurance companies and what was extra. But I know for a fact that you have given away a lot of business as far as not charging people who could not afford. And this is something that's been going on in the medical profession for many, many years, including hospitals. I know that they would write off expenses and things like that. And people were still getting health care. May not been in a hands-on way like you would have with the people that was your normal patients and things like that. But really, people were not being turned away from hospitals that I know of. But they were trying to do what they could to help everybody. I mean, you still had that basic attitude. If they're sick, we're going to try to help them. Was that not a way that we could have continued and then improved on that practice without government getting involved? And, you know, the AMA, you and I have talked about this in the past. A lot of times doctors are not on the same page when it deals with the reality of their careers and what would be their goals to make medicine a top priority in this country that's not going to bankrupt the whole country.
Well, I think that one of the things, there are many things that have changed, but just in my lifetime, in my, you know, what I've seen in the early 80s when the CAT scan was developed, mm-hmm. that changed a lot of things, because before that, the most advanced technology was ultrasound and X-ray. Mm-hmm. Those costs were small. So a hospital could take care of everybody. And even the people who had to be done on an indigent basis, the total cost of their care was a relatively small amount of money. Mm-hmm. Today, if you have a person come in who's indigent and they say they have a cancer and they have to have specialized imaging and then radiation therapy and then chemotherapy, one patient could easily cost $2 or $3 million.
Wow.
I mean, and it's hard for hospitals to absorb that. That's just the phenomenal costs. And that was not even possible back in the 70s. It couldn't do that.
Mm.
And, you know, somebody could stay in the hospital a month and it wouldn't cost that much.
We're going to take a quick break and get right back with that with Dr. Dan Rudd, because that's one of the questions that a lot of people have been asking lately.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
ProLift Systems is involved with all aspects of foundation repair. ProLift Systems 481-4735 has 2 decades of experience in residential and commercial construction and foundation repair in Murfreesboro and surrounding areas. ProLift Systems 481-4735. If you notice drywall cracks, doors and windows that are hard to open, cracks in mortar, or water in the crawl space, call ProLift Systems at 481-4735 for a free inspection and estimate.
Have you ever considered how trust plays an important role every time you buy something? You could say without trust, the way we shop would change completely. Today's savvy consumers know the most important step to trust and satisfaction is doing business with a company that has made a public commitment to doing what is right. Our BBB accredited businesses make this commitment. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes. We're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Paper.
Looking for a really smart gift for your child or grandchild this holiday? Something that won't break or need batteries? Try the Tennessee Department of Treasury's new Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program. If you open a Tennessee Stars account with at least $50 by December 31st, 2012, you get a one-time $50 match from the state. Roll over your entire balance from another college savings plan and receive $100 in your Tennessee Stars account. To learn about the Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program, its investment objectives, risks, and costs, read the official statement available at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free 855-386-7827. Check with your home state to learn if it offers tax or other benefits for investing in its own 529 plan. Tennessee Stars is the holiday gift that keeps on giving for a lifetime. Visit www.tnstars.com or call toll-free 855-386-7827 and open your account today.
Since 1940, your first choice for air conditioning and heating repairs has been Roscoe Brown. Now when you have plumbing problems, it's also Roscoe Brown. You can depend on Roscoe Brown for any type of plumbing service and innovative plumbing solutions. Roscoe Brown is fully licensed, bonded, and insured, and fully qualified to assist with heating, air conditioning, and now plumbing. Roscoe Brown. Phone 888-MY-ROSCOE.
WeatherEye.
A look at the forecast now with staff meteorologist Sam Denisky, 53, and sunshine now. Hey, Sam.
Well, Brian, we're going to be seeing a little bit of sunshine developing here this afternoon as that cloud cover drifts away. High temperatures will be mild in the low to mid-60s with north winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, just a few scattered clouds, otherwise we'll have clear and quiet conditions with lows near 40. Back to highs near 60 Thursday, we will see more clouds though and a slight chance for some more rain. And then we could see more scattered showers again on Friday with highs near 64 degrees. From the WeatherEye Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Sam Denisky.
Sam, thanks. 53 and sunshine now. Our good neighbor of the day, Kathleen Herzog at Main Street, helping to organize the Friday night lights, our lighting of the Christmas tree on the square. She receives flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts today as our good neighbor. And congrats to 10-year-old Haley Love. She receives the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland.
That update brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Introducing Progressive's exclusive Snapshot Discount, a program that tracks your good driving and rewards it with discounts. Find out more at progressive.com. Again, that's progressive.com.
You're listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now back to Truman Jones.
And back with Dr. Dan Rudd. And this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means At Home Care is hands-on, involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation, church, or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639, online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639, At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. You know, I've seen, and you've always been, as long as I've known you, you've always been one of my best friends. I mean, you're one of these people that shows up when things start going wrong or whatever. And, you know, over the years, there's nothing like the type of friendship that you know that you can count on. And you've displayed that not only with me, but with so many other people in the community. And I never will forget when you were kind of closing down shop a little bit. Oh, there's a big uproar. Where is he going? What are we going to do? I mean, it was just like something, a whole page had been ripped out of the book of their lives, and they didn't know what in the world they could do about it. And that's, isn't it something how one person It's like It's a Wonderful Life, how you have affected so many people in the community. It's amazing.
Well, I appreciate that, Truman. I don't know if that's totally unbiased, but I still appreciate it.
Well, it's not unbiased.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you care about somebody as much as I care about you, it's definitely not. And I never will forget when Dr. Rulon, and not so many weeks ago, had become ill, and we got to go over and see him a couple of days before he passed. And that was a special thing. But he really thought a lot of you. He always mentioned the fact that how much that you meant to the medical community and to him personally over there, because he was one of these people that he ran the old-fashioned hospital in the, or was a leader there.
He was.
In Woodbury.
Well, I've known I'd known Dr. Rulon, I guess, since the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the hospital actually was doing quite well in Woodbury. And I had the opportunity to work over there and in Murfreesboro, both places, for a few years. Mm-hmm. And really enjoyed it. There were a lot of very nice people in Cannon County that helped me to get started in practice, and I appreciated it a great deal.
Now, we were talking about hospitals a minute ago and the extraordinary cost of running a hospital. Once we start getting more and more socialized medicine into this country, will we still be able to maintain the same level of effectiveness in medicine and efficiency that we have in the past? And I know with all the machinery and the technology that's coming past, they're able to diagnose things quicker and a whole lot better. But what happens when you lose that connection with your physicians?
Well, I think that's kind of two different things. I mean, the hospital part of it is changing a lot based on technology. When I started practice, there were, if someone had cataract surgery, they were in the hospital for a week. Mm-hmm. Today, it's done as an outpatient. There's no need to be in the hospital. There's so many things that have changed as far as the way we treat them. The treatments are better. They're more effective. People respond better to them. Hospital stays are just so much less than they used to be. We do a lot more things as an outpatient.
Now, some of that's controlled by insurance companies, too.
Some of it is, but it's still based on the reality that we're able to do it.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Dr. Dan Rudd.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to know if Dr. Rudd could tell me the difference in dementia versus Alzheimer's with an elderly parent. At what point do you start getting concerned, or because they want to remain independent?
Well, that's a very common problem too. We see that a lot. Dementia is basically a broad name for a decline in cognitive function or in brain function. Alzheimer's disease is under the umbrella of dementia. Alzheimer's disease is a specific condition that is becoming more and more defined pathologically based on the way the brain looks. And we know there are a lot of things that cause dementia that a lot of times people think, well, that's Alzheimer's disease. But when I see a patient now or talk to someone about a parent, one of the biggest things I like to look at first is, are we dealing with true dementia, or are we dealing with what I call pseudo-dementia, or a secondary cause of what looks like dementia but isn't? And the things that can trigger that most commonly that I see are medications. And so I like to do a very careful review of what medicines a person's taking. The next thing that I like to be sure of is that there's not an endocrine or a metabolic cause of their decline, and it takes doing some blood work and some other things. And once you get past that, then the imaging is important as far as looking at the brain on the MRI scan to be sure that we're not dealing with a tumor. that there's no other medical condition that is contributing to it. And then there's so many conditions that basically we, since Alzheimer's disease is such a common problem, we kind of go that way initially with treatment, because the treatment for Alzheimer's disease is safe, it's well tolerated, and it doesn't hurt to try it pretty quickly in the process. Alzheimer's disease is not curable. It is treatable. The medications that we use for Alzheimer's disease are aimed at raising certain chemical levels in the brain. The medications seem to have a delaying effect on the progression in many patients, delaying the disease 2 to 3 years. It's important to stay on the medicine longer than that, because if at any point you stop the medication, and in fact they do have Alzheimer's disease, you'll see a rapid decline in how they do. And you will not be able to recover from that by returning to the medication. It's something that is prevalent. There's probably not a person out there who's not touched by Alzheimer's disease, in friends, family, somebody, because it is everywhere. We're seeing an aging of our population. Typically, Alzheimer's is of older people, but I can tell you that it occurs in younger people. It can even occur in the 30s. I've seen it in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s. I've not seen it in the 30s personally, but I know it's reported there. But I have seen it in the 40s. I have seen it in the 50s. And of course, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it's more common. But it is a disease that is a very significant disease economically. The loss of productivity, the loss in the quality of life, the burden to the caregivers is tremendous. And it's a disease that hopefully more research will lead to better ways to not so much treat it, but to prevent it. Because I doubt that there are going to be treatments that come along that do much after the damage is done. The real effective treatments are going to have to be done prior to that. So hopefully that answers the question there, but I do think that's a very pertinent question in our society today.
It does. Is there a telltale sign that you would be watching for, like if a parent begins to repeat stories or say the same thing 2 or 3 times in a 30-minute period, that would raise a red flag?
Well, I think that could be one thing they might do, but I wouldn't want you following me around, because I might do that too. But it's one of those things that the things that bother me more than just forgetting your keys is to forget big things, like forget where you live, forget where you are right now. And, you know, if you're in a store or you're driving and you really forget, you don't know where you are. That's the signs that really will cue me in that, you know, this is something that has to be addressed. And, you know, that may sound strange to people who've not really encountered it, but that's common. Those are things that happen to people who have Alzheimer's disease. Some people have what is known as minimal cognitive change, which is it's a variant that not all of the people who develop some cognitive impairment will go on to Alzheimer's disease, but a relatively high percent of those people in that category do. And those are people who may have more memory loss than you think of as normal, but it's still within the range of functioning. And so much of it is related to where someone functions at their baseline. If you're dealing with someone who is, say, a physicist or a chemist, and they're very intellectual person, they may have a significant amount of decline before anybody catches on because they function at such a high level. And there may be people who, you know, who don't function at that high level day to day who, by the, when you notice symptoms, they're severely impaired. They can't function at all. And I've seen both of those. But any time you start to identify it, a symptom, I think it's a good idea to go ahead and begin the process of trying to get an evaluation done.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's some very helpful information. Thank you.
And Dr. Rudd, we have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Dr. Dan Rudd.
Hey, Dr. Rudd, I'm Charlie Pitts, and I think my wife and I both may be losing our memory at the same time. We had a real light dinner the other night, and she says, honey, what about a little scoop of ice cream with chocolate syrup on it? I said, I'd love it. So she, I said, now write it down, you might. So she got in there and put a couple of dishes away and came back in a few minutes with two cups of ham sandwiches with a dash of chocolate syrup on them. And I guess I forgot what I said. My daughter reminded me. I said, honey, I wanted mustard on mine. So we just missed the whole ball game there. Is that a sign of a...
Well, it sounds like at least you're going together, and so
yeah,
you know, that's right. A good thing.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 8.5 years older than my wife, and you know, that was my retirement. I was supposed to play golf for 10 years and let her work, but she had a slight heart attack in 2004, and then I hadn't played a game of golf in 8 years.
Well, you know what they say about plans. They're made to change. Yeah. So it sounds like you need a plan B.
Yeah, and you know those. I heard another commercial on the radio this morning about donate your car to the blind. Please don't do that. One like hit me the other day. He was driving a Hummer. He came through this red light on Las Casas Pike. I said that must be one of those cars donated to the blind right there. So we need to donate so people can see.
That sounds like a good plan too.
There you go. I'll be listening to you.
Okay. Thank have you. A good day.
Bye. Bye.
You need to hire Charlie to work in your office. What do you think about that? All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with Dr. Dan Rudd.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
It's time. Blue Raiders.
Come join the Blue Raider basketball teams this week in Murphy Center. The men battle UAB today at 7 and SEC foe Ole Miss on Saturday at 4. The women face Xavier tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Get to the Borough and see the action courtside. Tickets are only $10.
Show your true blue. Support your Blue Raiders. Tickets available at GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Go Blue Raiders.
Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes. We're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Paper.
Visiting with Dr. Rishi Saxena, board-certified cardiologist. Dr. Saxena, what makes the 64-slice CT scan better than heart catheterization or the treadmill stress test?
This is non-invasive, so you could find the information without putting any needle in the body, then act on it to cut down your risk of heart attack and death from happening.
Before your doctor does a stress test or heart catheterization, call 896-4800. Dr. Rishi Saxena, the only certified physician in heart CT in this area.
Right now, one in three drivers is cruising around in a state of skepticism about just how much value their car insurance company is delivering. If you're one of them, I'm State Farm Agent Celeste Middleton, and I can help you get to a better state because I'll talk with you, listen to you, and help you put together a policy that has you written all over it, all backed by 24/7 customer support. Feeling less skeptical? Give me a call at 895-2700.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Celeste Middleton. Give me a call at 895-2700.
It's The Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Dr. Dan Rudd. This part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. You know, you and I have grown up in the best of times. I mean, we're talking about the 50s and the 60s, and it seemed like that the problems were a whole lot smaller back then. And you look forward to starting your career and doing so many things. And now it seems like there's almost some type of debate or controversy over everything that happens this day. Do you think our Madison and my grandkids and all of them, what are we going to be facing when it concerns medical practice in the next 20 years? Or is it impossible to even equate anymore?
I think it's impossible, because we're facing a time where technology is coming up with new things all the time. We live in a world that is information driven. 24 hours a day, you can sit and watch an internet camera of traffic in Tokyo, mm-hmm. or whatever you want. You can watch a video online to watch them repair a knee. There are so many things out there now that are coming along and changing, that one or two things that would develop could totally alter everything. And I think that especially when it comes to treatments, we're seeing a lot of treatments that are developed on the immune system. Mm-hmm. And the immune system is responsible for so much as far as aging, as far as disease development and progression. And learning how to control and manipulate the immune system is going to be an incredibly important therapeutic tool in the future. Learning how to work with DNA, mm-hmm. which, you know, now that we have the Human Genome Project completed and we have the human DNA totally sequenced and identified, it opens the door for developing genetic treatments, mm-hmm. genetic types of treatment. And who knows where that's going? I mean, you know, nobody could have predicted the computer and what that's done, mm-hmm. how it's changed our world. And I think the same thing is out there as a potential in healthcare. We have no clue where it's going. And some company or some young, bright researcher somewhere is going to develop something that is going to be just a game changer. And, you know, we have to just expect that.
You know, as medicine gets better as far as making people last longer, it seems like as we do, new things come up to affect people. We're not meant to be on this earth forever. You know, we've got a certain time limit. Are we really making things better when people live on up into their 90s or maybe even beyond that, but yet they have things that happen to them during that time that... is there any time where quality of life actually steps in? Or is it possible? Because I know that you are bound by the Hippocratic Oath and that you have to do things to help people.
Well, that's a philosophical question that is so deep. And
it is.
And I think that, you know, when it comes to the world as a reality, you know, we lived years ago, there was a time where people died earlier, and so there were not as many elderly people. Mm-hmm. And the number of working people that were out there to support one non-working person was a lot higher than
right.
that ratio is today. And today, as we have, I mean, you know, we have a system of retirement that is totally screwed up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't let people retire after 20 years when they're going to live 40 years longer than that
right.
retired.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make sense. And so we haven't caught up with the policy that's necessary to allow people to basically live to be 80 and 90 years old. you know, that is a policy problem, that, you know, people can't become non-functioning and retire in such huge numbers and expect a small number of people who are working to take care of them. It's not feasible. And at some point, that's going to end. I don't know how it'll be or exactly when, but people are going to have to work longer if they live longer, as a rule.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons that we remember things so differently back then, was that people did not live as long back then. You don't remember them when they were going through their illnesses for so long and not being able to do the normal things that they were able to do. You remember them during their health times and all of that, and when they were beneficial to what was going on at the time. I know everybody on this earth, they want to contribute. And when you're no longer able to contribute, it changes your whole lifestyle and everything, and even your own thoughts about yourself. I know if you're not out there able to do something, it really kind of sends you in a tailspin sometimes.
Especially for people who are really driven, hardworking people who have something happen, like a stroke or, you know, some other physical disability that comes up, that their mind is good, mm-hmm. but their body is shot. Mm-hmm. When their body gives up on them, but their mind is still functioning, it's a very stressful place for many people to be.
It's always good to have you on. It's always good to be with you. Well, I guess we should have talked about some things that were more pleasant, because I'm down now.
Well, look out at the sunshine.
Oh, it's beautiful.
There you go.
Today.
Now I feel better.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I mean, there's always a bright light for anything is going on.
That's right. Well, thank you for having me, Truman. It's good to be here.
It's always good to have you, and be sure to tell Madison hi.
I will.
She is the sweetest and the brightest. It's amazing.
Well, I don't mind you being biased. I am too, so there you go.
We'll see you guys in the morning at 9 a.m., and we'll have Attorney General Bill White's along.